Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Let's talk some football, shall we? The beautiful game, because there's a very busy weekend of EPL football coming up. We'll go through some of those games with our guest Ricardo Ball. Of course, everyone knows Ricardo. He's host of Phoenix Nation. He's on this particular radio station more often than he's not when he's available, which is fantastic for us. He knows a lot about football. He knows about the market transfer, the managers going from club to club. So Ricardo Ball is the perfect guy, as I say good morning to you, Ricardo, to tell us who the next football All Whites coach is, please. You'll know that, won't you?
Well, mate, I don't think New Zealand football know that, Smithy, so it's a bit of a dark one, unfortunately. Obviously, our good friend Andrew Gordy had some pretty good oil. From what I understand, he got it straight from New Zealand football that it was going to be John Herdman. And then John Herdman announces that he's staying at Canada to the 2026 World Cup. And I've got to say, I thought it was an interesting, an interesting name to be linked to our job, because I was like, you know, I love New Zealand football, but John Herdman's in Canada, who are hosts of the next World Cup, have just been to Qatar, have got a bunch of players playing in the top leagues in Europe. I'm like, why is he coming back to New Zealand? Not that I hate the idea, but it just made no sense. And the only thing I can put it down to, Smithy, is, and I don't know this for sure, but this is, you know, me speculating, is that he's basically played New Zealand football. He did have, apparently he was approached by a recruiter, said he was interested. He's put that out there. Obviously, this story comes out, Canadian football go, oh, we need to re-sign him to a new deal, and he gets a better deal. That's what it looks like to me. So who's it next going to be? I think they have to go back to the market, because Des Buckingham, he said no. Well, they said no to him, and he signed a deal, a long-term deal, where he is in India. Then Ufuk Talay's basically said, well, I don't want to be the bridesmaid, so no, that ship sailed. I'm not going to do it. You've got Darren Baisley, who's the caretaker at the moment. It was the assistant under Danny Hay. He's probably the most obvious one now to carry on. There was one other name that they hadn't mentioned. I don't know who that is. So, yeah, for me, it's back to the drawing board for New Zealand football, unfortunately, and it doesn't look good for anybody. It's egg on a lot of faces.
Well, Gords is a very respectable journalist. We know that. He's very highly rated within the New Zealand media system. So, when someone from New Zealand football, and we're imagining someone fairly high up, goes to him and says, this is the go, I mean, he's within his rights to believe it, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, totally. Look, you know, I mean, I said on my Twitter feed, you know, had lots of people talking about it, and I said, look, you know, Gordy and Andrew Vorman, who also carried the story for stuff.co.nz, had both gone with it, and they were both copping a bit of stick. A lot of Canadian fans, funnily enough, giving them stick. But I said, you know, these guys are renowned journalists. They do their due diligence on stories. They haven't put this out there on a whim. It's not a guess. They're not just trying to, you know, stir up clicks. They've heard something that they've been able to ratify with someone else. They would have double-checked this, and it's fallen over. And I think from that, I mean, it doesn't look good for them, obviously, on the face of things. But if you consider all of that, then you have to consider that New Zealand football have made, shall we say, a rare misstep, Smithy.
Right, Wellington Phoenix. Let's get a little bit closer to home. Wellington Phoenix have had a few dramas. They've questioned the VAR's involvement in Tim Payne's red card last weekend. Where's that ended up?
Well, it's ended up nowhere, really. I mean, I had David Dome, the GM, on yesterday, and it's not often, Smithy, that you get a GM of a sporting franchise publicly go to the media and criticise the referees or the refereeing organisation, but that's what he did yesterday with us. He said that they're going to take it, basically they're going to table it at the next APL board meeting, that there needs to be a change. They're currently lobbying because all the referees still come under Australian football, and the APL is a separate organisation now that runs the A-League, so they're basically lobbying to get that under the APL so they can change things. So the story is that the idea with VAR is that they can only get involved if there's a clear and obvious error. With the Tim Payne thing, without going too deep into it, there were possibly the goalkeeper and definitely two defenders covering, I think. And then also the thought that David Williams was no guarantee to get to the ball. So I don't think that's a clear and obvious error. That's when VAR should say, all right, well, we have to go with the referee's decision here because it's not clear and obvious. But they did get involved, VAR. So what David Domes said to the people that run referees in Australia is, look, how is this clear and obvious? They're like, it's not clear and obvious. He shouldn't have done it, shouldn't have got involved. And it's like, right, so what do we do? Well, that's down to this other organisation that does the red cards. We can't do anything about it. So even though we've admitted we're wrong, we can't actually change the decision. And that's happened several times to the Phoenix this season. Happened with the women's game on the weekend as well, where they were down to 10, and they managed to come back from two goals down to score a goal that would have made it 4-3. It was given offside, but there is no angle to say it was offside. And that was given by VAR as well. So definitely, I mean, it's veering into Warriors territory of a few years ago, Smithy, but the fact that the GM's coming out and saying that something is horribly wrong with the system has certainly perked a lot of ears up, and I know Australia are certainly listening as well.
Okay, well, staying on the subject of the Phoenix, of course, they're currently fourth. They play Melbourne Victory tonight at 9:45 p.m. our time. Not a game to be taken lightly.
No, the Victory are never a team to take lightly, although at the moment I've jumped on them. I suggested to a few people yesterday they should jump on them as well. I haven't had a look at the market today, but yesterday the Phoenix were paying $3.30 against the team that's bottom of the table and they're third. At the TAB, so Smithy, that might be one after this chat for you to jump on. But well, yeah, I think, I mean, Melbourne Victory, there's always been a real almost derby-like intensity between the Victory and the Phoenix, and I don't think that changes. Victory have been struggling, they've got some injuries, they're not in great form, the coach is under pressure, and on the flip side of it, you know, the Phoenix are travelling pretty well. I know Talay will be disappointed to have given up their 2 points that we dropped against Perth, but once again, that's down to the officials. As a result of that, we'll probably have Josh Rawls and Finn Sermon at centre-back because Scott Wooten is injured and Tim Payne is suspended, obviously, which does, you know, it's not our most experienced centre-back lineup, but I think going forward, we've got enough goals in the Phoenix that they should win this game. So, and I think it's a game that they've got a target to win because this is the bottom of the table team, regardless of what shirt they wear. And if you're really serious about cementing your place in the playoffs in such a tight league, you need to be beating the bottom of the table.
You do, absolutely you do. Full weekend of EPL action, full weekend of EPL action, beginning with Chelsea, Fulham, Man U play Palace, Spurs play City, I think on Monday morning. Key games for you over the weekend?
I'm really interested to see Chelsea-Fulham. I mean, Fulham have been tracking really, really well, and this is a derby. Chelsea have been underperforming. I mean, Fulham are above Chelsea in the league, and they're tracking really, really well at the moment, Fulham. So I think this is a big challenge for Chelsea. These two played each other not long ago, and Chelsea did manage to get up. So it'll be interesting to see how they go at home to Stamford Bridge, where there's a bit more pressure on. They've made a bunch of new signings in the transfer window. How many of those we'll see? Probably not too many, because I think it's probably a little bit early to have integrated them into the squad properly. But, yeah, interesting to see what happens in that game. I think there's every chance Fulham takes something away from Stamford Bridge. And, you know, Chelsea, I think, Smithy, you know, you look at the money they've spent. I think in 2022, English clubs spent just over $2 billion in the transfer market, and a quarter of that was Chelsea. So if they don't make the Champions League next season, there could be some real heavy financial pressure come on Chelsea. So this is a really interesting one to watch from that point of view as well. So that's the game that really interests me and probably the most. Also, looking forward to Monday morning, Spurs-Man City. Your Spurs hosting Man City, and you know, those are two teams that don't like each other very much, and there's a bit of history there, and Spurs have taken points off Man City in recent times. So I know Spurs haven't been on a great run recently, but neither have Man City, so that'll be another one to watch, I think.
Well, Spurs were up 2-0 in the last encounter, and Manchester City scored 4 second-half goals, knocked them over 4-2. But Harry Kane did score one of those goals, and it was his to score again. He goes past Jimmy Greaves, who is an absolute icon in the game, so Harry Kane, all sorts of rumours about where he might not be going, but for the moment, he's about to cement himself, I think, as the greatest scorer of all time for Spurs.
Yeah, exactly. Making history. I mean, there's been some fantastic strikers there, and Gary Lineker played there, Clive Allen played there, as you mentioned, Jimmy Greaves, some real big names, Jurgen Klinsmann, obviously, as well. So to be the number one top scorer for Spurs, if he can get that done, which he will at some point this season, that is a massive achievement for Harry Kane. And then you wonder what it is more, you know, what else is there for him to do at Spurs, given that things in the back room seem a little bit up in the air. Antonio Conte is a coach that I don't think they've quite got what they wanted out of him, and I don't think he's quite got what he wanted out of the club. His contract runs out at the end of the season, and he has showed no signs of signing a new one, which is interesting. So what do Spurs do from there? I mean, it's that sort of uncertainty that you think might drive Harry Kane out of the club, given that by the end of the season he's only got a year left on his contract at Spurs.
Crucial stage of the season two for one of the proudest football clubs in the league, and that, of course, is Everton. They host competition leaders, Arsenal, at the weekend, and they host them with a new manager in Sean Dyche at the helm, who wasn't everybody's choice. Can he pull the Oracle for them?
I think he can. I think Sean Dyche is the best choice they could have made. Bielsa, who was at Leeds there, the Argentinian, he was talked about a lot, but Bielsa, the way he plays the game, he has to have his players, basically his players, run into the ground for him. And I think he's the sort of coach that you need at the start of the season. So he's got a pre-season to implement things. Parachuting him in mid-season, I don't think would have worked. In fact, he said when he was approached that he would come in and coach the Everton under-21s for the rest of the season and then take over the first team before next season. That's what he wanted to do. He didn't want to take the job now. So they said no to him and they went to Sean Dyche. And, you know, Sean Dyche, I think he's got more about him than Sam Allardyce, but in a way he's that kind of manager. He's the firefighter. He can play defensive, ugly football where you're hard to beat, you're hard to break down. They launch it, they might nick it 1-0, and they're physical and they're ugly to play against. And there's a few players there at Everton, like James Tarkowski and Dwight McNeil, that he coached at Burnley. So I think it's a really good fit. You know, they've managed to absolutely botch the transfer window, which is not Sean Dyche's fault. But if there's one team that needed to make signings in the transfer window, it was Everton, and they managed to get in precisely no one. They're the only club in the Premier League that signed no one. So I think he's got a real job on his hands, but I think he's the right man for the job. It's just whether or not he's got enough resources to keep them up.
Interesting indeed. We'll keep an eye on developments over the EPL. Good luck to the Phoenix tonight, and the saga of the All Whites coach will continue on, no doubt. Ricardo Ball, always great to catch up with you, man. Have a terrific weekend. I hope you're dry.
Yeah, so far, Smithy. You too, bud.